One of China's largest property developers announced today it's going to miss its interest payments as the Beijing bailout has totally failed. Will Wells Fargo be broken up? And did the Fed completely miss the boat on inflation? Answer those questions and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. You'll notice we've come back to the walls for a little bit just because there's a bit of a pullback in bonds, but you can see this huge risk-off move coming ahead of what is a massive liquidity crisis brewing in China that U.S. investors are completely oblivious to and should be paying attention. So let's give an overview and then bring you up to date on how the situation is going from bad to potentially now worse, as again, Beijing's bailout appears to have done nothing. So we start with Evergrande, a company that is one of China's largest property developers. In fact, they own about 2% of all property in China, which is huge. And they are a $200 billion company that has $300 billion in US dollar denominated debt. So $200 billion of assets, $300 billion of debt. That is a huge problem. To put that in perspective, Lehman Brothers, when they failed, they were a $600 billion company, and they weren't just in real estate. They were a broad bank, whereas this is just in real estate. If you've ever invested or owned real estate, you know it's generally not liquid when things go wrong. So let's take a look at the situation, because they're not, we're gonna see how they're not about to make their interest payments. And so what can they do to get the money? Well, they can sell real estate. So when you start selling real estate and you're one of the biggest holders of real estate, what do you think that does for prices? That's right, it puts downward pressure on prices in a market that's already slowing down. And this leads to eventually forced liquidations as contractors, investors, and other people aren't paid the money that they're due for their bills that they have. So this is a very serious situation, and let's take a look at what's transpired in the news and just since our show on Monday, because yes, things are going from bad to potentially worse. Major banks are now embracing the Evergrande September loan interest miss report, as Evergrande has announced to China's major banks that is not going to be able to pay its loan interest due on September 20th, underlying the broadening impact of the property developer's liquidity crisis. And again, because this is in real estate, and real estate is illiquid, if they are forced to start selling, it's going to have massive repercussions. It's going to be like dominoes just falling all around the global economy as everybody rushes for safety. Let's continue on this. The troubles ailing the nation's number two property developer have already sparked social anger among investors and home buyers. Imagine you now bought a home from them and they're looking at liquidating their book, what that's going to do to your property values, and raise risk for China's vast financial system, because many large banks, not just in China, but around the world, hold debt from this company. When you have $300 billion in debt, guarantee you it's not held in one place. And this is why the S&P has further downgraded them to a double C, citing a risk of default. And Fitch has noted that this could have a broader impact, and no surprise there. And people are lining up at the headquarters demanding their money. So let's go over to the Wall Street Journal and see. Now this came, that was today, that was from Reuters. And now yesterday, China's Evergrande Group moved closer to potential restructuring of just $89 billion in debt. Well, that lasted a day. And the real estate giant warned on Tuesday that ongoing negative media reports have hurt home buyers' confidence in Evergrande. So that means significantly lower sales in September, which is a strong month for China's property industry. Now think about this. If you're hurting for money and you have new developments that are coming on the market to sell, well, what can you do? You could sell them, take that cash flow, and pay on your debt. But now all of a sudden, investors aren't, or buyers aren't that interested, because they're worried about the company going under. And that, of course, makes things worse. This is a slippery slope that once it starts to tip over, it's just really hard to stop. So as I said, lower sales would turn in place tremendous pressure on the group's cash flow, shocking, and liquidity. Meanwhile, it attempts to raise cash by selling its Hong Kong offices, and stakes in some units were taking longer than planned. And so there you have some of the problems building. They're already trying to sell real estate, and everyone knows they need to sell, which is very, very dangerous. And let's see what else we've got here. This leaves Evergrande very few options. They're slowing apartment sales and lack of bargaining power with potential asset buyers, but the government must keep a close eye on it. If social unrest keeps spreading or the financial market is roiled, the government will step in to help. Well, the question is, how is the government going to step in to help? Are they going to bid up housing prices, or are they just going to give Evergrande money? Maybe restructure their loans internally. That's a possibility, bail them out directly. But the question is, how long can Beijing continue to do that if they go down that route? As people say, no, I don't want to hold their debt. I don't want to buy their property. And we can see that now transmitting into the capital markets. So here we see this from Zero Hedge. China yuan swaps soar amid fears Evergrande default will lead to liquidity crisis. And there you go. Their one-year offshore swap curve surged to the highest in almost 4 years, signaling market worries over liquidity shortage. There you go. On a potential default by key property developer Evergrande. And then you see down here, considering huge uncertainties over key developers' bond default and the possible spillover to the property sector, market participants might intend to swap more CNH and CNY liquidity in the currency swap markets, which is buy or sell U.S. dollars against yuan, said chief Asian FX strategist at Mizuho. So this is a problem that is brewing. That the question then is, why isn't Beijing doing anything? And so far, they're doing nothing. They're just standing back. As just the other day, as we announced that they were going to do something, and well, now they're doing nothing. So let's take a look at now Wells Fargo, because are they about to see a breakup? Well, we'll go over to the New York Times, where Elizabeth Warren asked the Fed to break up Wells Fargo. She wants the Federal Reserve to revoke a key operating license and force a split between Wells Fargo's banking and Wall Street business. Now, this has some interesting repercussions. Is it likely to happen? Well, we may hear from the Fed at their FOMC meeting coming up next week. Senator Elizabeth Warren says Wells Fargo's run out of time to fix the many internal problems that have harmed its customers. And in a letter to Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell on Monday, Ms. Warren asked the Fed to force the financial giant to break off its core business activities like checking, savings, and loans from its other financial services. And so here's the issue from a monetary perspective, from an investment perspective. We talked about how Credit Suisse banking expert Zoltan Pozsar said that if Wells Fargo could get out of the penalty box, well, what would that mean? That it could come out and buy virtually overnight $100 billion in treasuries. Now, we have to look at the fact that Elizabeth Warren, obviously very powerful in Congress, is saying, I want them broken up. Here you go, Mr. Fed Chair. This is what I'm asking you to do. So is it likely that the Fed is going to release Wells Fargo from the penalty box? Not at all. That is going to continue to put pressure as deposits flow into Bank of America and JP Morgan Chase, and that hurts the velocity of money. If Wells Fargo could come out of the penalty box, start buying bonds, take on more loans, take on more deposits, we could see some movement of money, and we're not going to see that. So that means the likeliness of taper coming because Wells Fargo could absorb a bunch of debt. Well, at least from this standpoint, that's not going to happen. But even from an inflation standpoint, things are getting worse for the Fed as they talk taper. But all of a sudden, the trend's going a little different way. Let's get into some of the economic data here, and then let's look at the CPI report and why this data is telling us that consumer price inflation is going to slow much, much lower. Let's start out going back to Tuesday. Let's head over to Japan. We have capacity utilization and industrial production down 3.4 and 1.5%. Great Britain, we're seeing average earnings head higher, which is good news for them. Let's move into the Eurozone, and we see Spanish CPI month over month in August went from a deflationary minus 0.8 to an inflationary 0.5. So a big flip there from deflation to inflation in Spain. The year-over-year rate of change up to 3.3%. So definitely seeing some inflation there. How about we move into the U.S.? Well, we see small businesses remain very optimistic in August. We'll see how that changes in September as consumers have less money to spend as all of the stimulus is now fading and gone. Let's take a look at the consumer price index because this is the big issue. And what did we see? The consumer price index month over month completely missed expectations, went from 0.5, expectations at 0.4 to a disinflationary 0.3. The year-over-year trend stalled out from 5.4 and dipped slightly to 5.3. And as we pointed out in Monday's show, that what due to the relationship between crude oil and consumer prices, we're likely to see the year-over-year rate of change drop. But let's continue the story because there's even more to it than just that. Excluding food and energy, look at core CPI went from disinflationary down from 0.3 to 0.1. Even the year-over-year rate change dropped to 4%. So we're seeing a slowdown there. And here you can see the CPI chart looking like it's peaking, following what we already know in the year-over-year rate change in crude oil. And if when we look at the ISM prices paid, we see the consumer prices tend to peak after that peaks. We know that did. And let's look into the report because are these trends likely to continue? Is energy likely to continue running at a 25%+ year-over-year rate of change? Certainly not based on what we see in oil. We're going to talk more about crude oil here in a little bit. How about piped gas service? Is that going to continue to run at a 21% or higher year-over-year rate of change? Unlikely. If anything's going to remain high, it's used cars and trucks, which are running at about 32% year-over-year, and that's just because the recent flooding is going to take used cars off the market and put some pressure on cars. But will it remain that high? Well, probably not, because there is a point where people will stop buying. And so we could see crude oil has transmitted into high gas prices, and that again is not likely to sustain. Now, some other areas here that transmit into this is the money multiplier, which is the money stock, which is running a pretty strong 12% year-over-year rate of change. But this is likely to fall too, again, without government stimulus. And we have the monetary base, which is largely the Fed's balance sheet from quantitative easing. It's growing at around a little over 30% a year on year over year. And that brings us to the money multiplier. And this is a really important because the money multiplier says, is all this money in the US banking system getting out of the banking system into the real economy? And if it can get out into the real economy, it can create inflation. If it can't, it becomes disinflationary or even deflationary. So let's see what's going on with it. And all you do is take the M2 and divide it by the monetary base, multiply by 1,000, and you can see it's trending lower. And if you overlay inflation, what you see with the consumer price index is there are times when the CPI can rise against the money multiplier, which is trending lower, and ultimately as higher prices get rejected. And that is the key point I want to make is, if consumers cannot afford to pay higher prices, they get rejected. Now, I know lately people seem to think that they will somehow magically pay for things that they don't have money to pay for. But if you've ever bought anything on clearance, perhaps a car that was a prior model that was stock on the dealer's lot that no one wanted to buy, well, what do they do with the price? They usually lower it because they want it sold. And that is the same thing with wholesalers and retailers or anyone that has old inventory. They tend to move it. Now, how do you get old inventory? Well, you get it because consumers can't buy the new inventory and it sits on shelves. And we'll continue that story here pretty soon. So we'll come back to that. But here's the big issue is what you see is the Cleveland CPI stuck at 0.3. So this is a median CPI. So it's not showing that the inflation is broad-based. We saw the inflation isn't broad-based. But what about from a consumer's perspective? Well, real earnings or inflation-adjusted earnings month over month in August went from a deflationary minus 0.1 to an inflationary 0.3, meaning that consumers were ahead of inflation in August. But here's the part that they didn't say in that report, that if you look at real wages or inflation-adjusted earnings for the lowest income earners in the country, those who spend 100% of their paycheck, they were minus 0.5% from this time last year. That is not good. That means they can't continue to buy what they're used to. And if we go to this piece from the Wall Street Journal, we can see incomes less than 40,000. Where is their money going? Well, more money is going to groceries, meat, poultry, fish, and eggs, rent, utilities, fuel, public services, and gasoline. Now, how does that create inflation? Well, what it does is it sustains inflation in those areas because they have to pay for it. But true inflation, you have to be broad-based, and you need to see it in discretionary goods and services. So if people are forced to spend money, more money on things to get by, and they have less money due to those higher prices, well, then you don't get sustainable inflation because they can't afford as much. And that is the real key, is they cannot afford as much. All right, and then that turns us into this, which is our all-time high. 56 cargo ships are stuck waiting for California coast as shipping ports hit their fourth record backup in 3 weeks. And so this is being billed as, well, this is a lot of revenue coming in. But what I want you to understand is these are certain goods coming from foreign low-cost producers. And yes, shipping costs are up, but they're not enough to absorb all of those higher prices from U.S. producers. So what you have is disinflation parked off the California coast and Port of Long Beach and Los Angeles waiting to be unloaded, get into, you know, wholesalers and then into retailers. And as you're already seeing, consumers cannot afford them in a broad basis. And so that means products are likely to start sitting on shelves, and that will ultimately lead to lower prices. And this is how it all happens. So when you have a record number of ships or near record piling up with goods coming in, it's going to likely lead to lower prices. All right, let's continue on with the economic data. What do I have? Oh yeah, we're gonna talk about crude. I wanna get to crude. We'll get to that here in a moment. Let's continue on in the economic data. Big miss coming out of China. Retail sales year over year dropped to 2.5%. Industrial production slowed year to date, 13.1. Year over year slowed to 5.3. So we're seeing a slowdown in the Chinese economy, and that is not a good sign. How about we head back over to Great Britain? CPI pretty high, 0.7 month over and up months of Great Britain. Definitely feeling some heat of inflation there for sure. Producer prices on the input are up 0.4. On the output, where was that? Where's PPI output? Here it is, up 0.7, but they're barely passing this on. So the key is, what you understand is producers are struggling to pass on these price increases, and that is an issue because that means lower profits, lower profits, and that impacts obviously stock prices. So keep that in mind, that the year-over-year output is running at 5.9 and the CPI is at 3.2. So they're definitely not being able to passing on those higher prices. Means again, this is what's called taking it on the margin. That means taking it out of their profits. How about France also seeing a jump in inflation? CPI going up from 0.1 to 0.6. And then we move into the U.S. data where we see mortgage applications up a mere 0.3%. So not a big demand for mortgages at current interest rates, suggesting that rates will need to head lower. But here's the U.S. inflation story that no one was talking about today. Export price index up 0.4. So the U.S. is exporting inflation. But here it is, import, right? We talk about all those ships off the Port of Long Beach, off the Port of Los Angeles, import price index month over month, minus 0.3. That is deflationary. So again, we're importing deflation as more foreign produced goods get into the country. The New York Empire State Manufacturing Index improved from 18.3 after a big slowdown, but still expanding, increased its rate of expansion up to 34.3. Let's take a look at some more of the U.S. data from today. Well, of course, we got Canada, CPI, slowing down, disinflationary, 0.6 to 0.2. So finally, some of the heat of that growth rate and inflation cooling off there in Canada, although I'm sure they'd like it to slow down even more. Let's take a look at the factory data here in the U.S. We have capacity utilization rate. This is a strong metric of inflation. You need to get this number up to 80% before you really start seeing it. And it jumped from a whopping 76.2 to 76.4, so hardly a move at all. Industrial production, This takes into account manufacturing production, mining, and utilities. This month, industrial production up 0.4%, so slowing down a little bit, and manufacturing production by itself up 0.2%. Crude inventories are down due to the storms in the Gulf Coast, down 6.4 million barrels, and we see gasoline inventories down 1.8, distillate stocks, think of jet fuel, down 1.7 million. And now let's get into that story of what's going on with consumer prices and crude, because can we predict, this is what I want to know, is can we predict that consumer price inflation is going to head lower? Is the year-over-year rate of change in crude going to head lower? And let's take a look. We got some reports from on that. So let's refresh your memory on this chart. We see the CPI year-over-year way up here, and then the crude oil cooling off and coming down, also on a year-over-year trend. Let's take a look at this piece from the Wall Street Journal. Says global oil demand to exceed pre-pandemic levels next year, according to OPEC. So the cartel is saying its forecast for oil are going to go up next year to 100 million, demand for 2022 by just under a million barrels a day to 100.8 million barrels a day, higher than 2019's demand of 100.3 million barrels. Now let's take a look at the article that was yesterday that came out. Following that was the world's oil supply pressured by Hurricane Ida, other outages. The International Energy Agency cites Delta variant and trimming oil demand for third quarter. So perhaps next year OPEC is seeing more demand for oil in 2022, but we're worried about what is going to happen in the immediate future. And according to the IEA, well, it's going to go down. Now we look at how speculators are positioned in the crude oil market, and what do we see? Their speculative long positions have been continue to be reduced. And what does that tell you? Well, here's crude oil prices. Now, remember, we saw the year-over-year chart, but what's going to happen is crude oil prices were fairly stable going into December of last year. And they've kind of flatlined somewhere kind of March. You see prices are, you know, hovering around where they were, just above where they were in March. But you'll notice how prices in crude went up following mid-December and on. Means the year-over-year comp in oil, unless we see prices really start to rally, are going to continue to slow down. And then going into the December, they're going to start coming down quite a bit. And that, my friends, is going to put downward pressure on the CPI and take away any notion the Fed is going to taper. As always, appreciate you being fans. But remember, the biggest risk right now is keep an eye on China. What blows up there will have repercussions around the world. Thanks for being fans. Thanks for watching. I'm Steve Van Meter. I'll see you back on Wednesday or Friday for our show then. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only, is not intended to provide investment or other advice. Shows not to be construed as a recognition or solicitation by our security management instrument or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinions expressed in this video and do not reflect the value of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.